Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Iadarola, and we're very lucky to be joined once again by the only mildly high off his ass host of Deep Dive, Jordan Yule.
Oh, we're just gonna open with that.
not like that. I mean off of life and the news cycle and political victories and student debt cancellation. Who's not a little bit tipsy these days?
Yeah, that's it. That's
what we're talking about. Anyway, we're very glad to have you here. In fact, because we have Jordan, and because he dives deep on a weekly basis, if not more, we're going to be talking about something deep, the oceans, deep and getting increasingly hot. And so we're very lucky to be talking about that soon. We are going to be talking about some of the good news coming out of the elections recently. That's one of the stories I'm most excited for. More details that were not initially available about the student debt cancellation plan that, I don't know, I probably would have led with. We're going to be talking about those, as well as checking in on the state of the right, because we predicted that they would lose their ever loving S over the debt cancellation. And we're going to see if our prediction was right. But Jordan, it's great to have you here. How you doing, man?
Thanks, John. If you want to open with that, yeah, I'm on medication because I had surgery yesterday, and
I'm feeling bad for you. That's
nothing illegal.
No, nothing illegal. No, nothing at all like that. Sorry, and also, I now feel so. I came back from my trip pretty sick. When I was in Mexico, I was more ill than I've been in literally years. So my heart goes out to you in dealing with that. I'm still on the aftershocks of what I experienced down south, but in more ways than one. But anyway, very glad to have you on in literally any state. So thank you for being here.
I'm happy to be here. I love doing Damage Report.
Glad to have you here. And I would love for the studio not be blazing hot because I can't keep my glasses on because it keeps fogging up. But anyway, thank you everyone out there for being here. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that'd be great. We've got so much that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be diving into the new evidence of Ron DeSantis doing an ever increasingly plausible impersonation of Trump. That's going to be fun. We've got terrible stuff involving diplomatic immunity. We got a whole lot to talk about. Book bannings as well as book burnings. How fun is that? So yeah, hit the like button. Send us messages if you want to. Oh, also early heads up that after the show today, we are going to have our members hang out for the month. So if you're a tier three member, if you'd like to become one, we can chill. That'd be great. And with all that said, Jordan, you ready to talk about some news?
I was born ready, John.
You were born ready and you've only grown more ready ever since. So with that,
right.
Why don't we start things off on the right foot with some good news, as I'm literally sweating here. The last couple of years of news have been pretty bad. And I know many of you tune into the Damage Report expecting to be hit with stuff that is at the very least mildly depressing, but not today. Or well, later on today, but not right now. We are going to be hitting you with some of the good news that has come in some of the recent elections, as well as related matters recently, including throwbacks to some stories that we talked about on this show and across this network. So do you recall the Florida judge who denied a teen girl an abortion because her grades weren't good enough? He lost re-election. Isn't that nice? That's Jared Smith, an incumbent circuit judge for Hillsborough County, gained notoriety because he said, apparently you can only have freedom over your body if you get good enough grades. She was a 17-year-old seeking an abortion without parental consent back in January. He said she lacked intelligence or credibility and was thus not mature enough to get an abortion, although presumably mature enough to raise a human. Anyway, he won't be a judge anymore. So that's good news. Also, by the way, in Florida, Representative James Bush lost his reelection bid. He was the only Democrat in the state legislature who voted for a 15-week abortion ban and supported the Don't Say Gay bill. So multiple good election results there. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think it's great. On the Democrat who lost, I think it shows how ineffective appealing to conservatives is if you're running as a Democrat. Because if they have a choice between you, somebody who's taking right-wing stances to try to appeal to people across the aisle or in the middle, They're just going to go with the real thing. They're just going to go with the real Republican. So it's not a viable long-term strategy. So I hope Democrats realize that nationwide. On the judge thing, I think that's great. I'd be curious to see who replaces him. But yeah, also, you know, I'm still really worried in general about our rightward shift of the courts. And this week, The Lever had a really good story about an industrial magnate in Chicago giving, you know, $1.6 billion to Leonard Leah, who is the co-chair of the Federalist Society. He already had a ton of wealth and he had already worked to reshape the courts nationwide, including the Supreme Court. Now he's got a $1.6 billion war chest to keep doing that. So like, it's good, but it's also in the grand scheme of things, like, what's really gonna change? I hope people understand just how massive that's going to be in a boost for the right and the moral imperative to get involved, to fight back. You know, I as much as I want to say small dollar donations help and go a long way, like, we're not going to really be able to match that. So we're going to have to work above, I mean, go above and beyond in every other aspect of our organizing, of our community engagement, of our political engagement to beat that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad that you pointed out the $1.6 billion because that's, that one donation is more than progressive organizations like in the media will be given ever. You can fast forward 200 years, all told, it will not add up to that. But, you know, $1.6 billion there, I don't know if some beanie wearing idiot wants to make a music video, they'll throw millions of dollars at him to do that. Like, there's always money available on the other side. That is nice. But again, we are focusing briefly on the good news. We'll get to all sorts of bad news, including apocalyptic news coming up later on. Another good result, Scott Esk was a candidate for the Oklahoma House of Representatives who had said at multiple points across multiple years, including two journalists, that it was totally just and moral to stone gay people to death. He lost election. That was apparently slightly over the line, thankfully. So that's good news. We've got that. And this isn't technically an election, this is just somebody being fired. But I think a case could be made that it was warranted. Pete Arredondo has been fired by the school board community in Uvalde. And it was a unanimous vote and obviously an emotional, you know, situation. I'm gonna undercut the good news by just a little bit by saying getting rid of Pete Arredondo seems necessary, obviously. Does that solve the situation? Does it solve the problem? No, not at all. I mean, Pete Arredondo is a symptom of an absolutely broken, corrupt, sick machine. But if you hadn't had Pete Arredondo, the shooting still would have happened. The response might have been better. It might have been approaching competence. But so that's good. He got fired. He should be done in public life if there was any justice. So that's good news. Jordan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how different the situation would have been though without him. Because like you say, it's a symptom of a much larger disease. And it wasn't just one person who was hiding. It wasn't just one person who was harassing, assaulting, arresting parents in the parking lot who are just worried about their kids' safety in Uvalde. It's just, they're all like that. And it shows how, you know, ineffective they are and how they really don't even serve the purpose they purportedly serve, but also just how overpowered assault weapons are. Like, if you have hundreds of cops afraid to take on one kid with an AR-15, the problem is the gun. You know, there is a problem with the police, but like, if they're all scared of it, like, maybe that shouldn't be able to be purchased by consumers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I look, I can only speak for myself. I am never going to be satisfied with, no matter how fast a police response might be, it is always going to be a response. I don't want them to have to respond to someone having even 15 seconds of uninterrupted time using an assault weapon against innocent civilians. And that's the thing, you can replace Pete Arredondo, you can replace every cop in Uvalde, you can still go and buy one of these guns and you'll have at least a couple of minutes to kill as many kids as you want. And that is unacceptable, which is why from the very beginning with this story, as much as I am glad that people have focused on the incompetence of the cops, I always felt a little bit uncomfortable doing that because that took the attention off of the fundamental problem, which is that you can buy these guns in the first place. So we need to do both, okay? Other good news, there was a special election in a New York swing district. Democrat Pat Ryan actually won. And so that is good news. But more importantly, perhaps, people are now starting to analyze the pattern of the special elections that have happened since Biden. Or actually, this is just since the Dobbs decision back in June, the destruction of Roe v. Wade. And if we bring up this tweet by Ryan Matsumoto, you can see that there has been a pretty large and in uniform direction shift in how Trump performed in these areas versus how the special elections have happened. And look, it could be that there are reasons other than the Dobbs decision that it could be moving this direction, but look, honestly, I think one would expect that in these sorts of special elections, I would have expected that the normal historic pattern of midterms would have applied, which is that you would expect that the party out of power would have an outsized benefit to this time. And so it's possible that something like that is happening in terms of enthusiasm, and yet it's moving in the direction of the Democrats. And so I think people are starting to wonder if this is like a marker of a really big shift in how the midterms might work, Jordan. I'm not sure if that's something that you've been thinking about, but things aren't looking quite as ominous as they were something like 3 or 4 months ago.
It's hard to ignore, John. Historically, the party in power in midterms does relatively poorly. They usually lose a little bit. They might lose control of a chamber or Congress entirely. It's surprising. Democrats could defy history here if they continue what they've been doing over the past few weeks. We've seen a few really good things from the Democrats. I'm not saying perfect, so just everyone can chill out. But I think generally there are some things in the IRA that are good. Very deeply troubled about the climate or the climate provisions not being able to be enacted in part because of its boost to oil and gas. But there are a few other things that are really good. The student loan debt cancellation, the way they've been hammering Republicans on abortion. And now today moving to make DACA a federal rule so it can't be challenged. That's a really good thing. It's a really good thing that helps undocumented people in this country. So if they continue down this path of literally doing things, which is a little out of character for Democrats, but if they continue down this path, keep hammering Republicans for really just being the dog that caught the car on abortion. And also in the New York race, a really, really good ad that I saw from Ryan Grimm today was 50% of his ad expenditures, which is hammering big corporations and their price gouging on electricity.
Yeah.
That's something everybody can relate to. Hit people, you target the material conditions that people experience across the board, regardless of party, and you're going to see more support. Because what do the Republicans have to offer? Whining about culture war issues, complaining that you get $10,000 in relief in student loan debt, and insisting that you shouldn't be able to practice bodily autonomy? That's not a winning message.
Yeah. And then spending a week choosing a hill to die on of trying to stop vets from getting health insurance for the diseases that they've suffered. Yeah, they've had a couple of own goals over the past few months. And look, if we bring up this last graphic, you'll see how certain issues have changed in terms of their importance for people's vote. And you can see a 13-point jump in how important abortion is. I absolutely despise that this scale only goes to 20 and not to zero. I hate when people do that. But anyway, the coronavirus outbreak is a little bit less important to people. Foreign policy dropping. I'm assuming that's maybe, with the Ukraine being less daily news, perhaps people are less focused on that. But gun policy, violent crime are up. And the economy, which that means literally everything. So saying the economy is a weird thing to say, is still the most important issue by a good chunk. So look, I largely agree with you. I think we've been asking for the Democrats to literally do anything. I think with those exact words for some time, they've started to do it. It hasn't always been what we've wanted. I was somewhat critical, obviously, of the student debt cancellation plan yesterday. I'm gonna be a little bit more positive with the new details, but it's people like it when you actually govern. When they send you to office and you do not only anything, but literally the things that you campaigned on, that is how this process is supposed to work. When you do the opposite of that, when you campaign on something and then just don't even try to accomplish it, people are understandably frustrated. And you can see both parts of that process in play. people were okay with Biden for the first few months or so. He did, you know, a little bit of the stimulus aid. It seemed like he was taking Build Back Better seriously. Once they, like late last fall, they decided, well, I guess we're not gonna do this anymore. His numbers started to slip month after month after month because it appeared he had gone to sleep or at least given up. He'd surrendered on his agenda. And now that they're starting to do stuff, that's great. Now, a little bit of it, in terms of like, you know, people being fired up over the destruction of Roe v. Wade, this is a good side effect. I still find it to be an unacceptable side effect. And I still hate that the Democrats haven't done more to contradict a little bit of it being destroyed with the power that they have. But, you know, I guess we'll take it if it moves the needle, I suppose. Any other thoughts, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, you see that reaction in people. And I'm not saying the internet is reflective of the body politic at large, but there are a lot of people who are deeply engaged who spend time on the internet in political circles and political parts of the internet. And you saw that was like, I know it's not, you know, just the signal, but the Dark Brandon meme I saw being shared by people who would never otherwise support Biden or have been deeply critical of Biden. I think it shows that like people really want him to, like yesterday, telling the reporter, is that fair that corporations get tax cuts on the backs of the working class? That popped off so much. Another anecdote was last night, I guess AEW wrestling. Yep. They had like an applause line for student debt cancellation. Like what is happening here? And it's just that they're doing things that a lot of people really want and like. And people relate to it rather than just these abstract different, you know, tinkering around the edges and different federal rules and in the bureaucracy. Like do big things that people like and you'll be a popular president. It's very simple.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I saw someone saying, and this would be very in, you know, in fitting with the Dark Brandon meme, like he should cancel another 10K today. Like, can you imagine? Oh God, can you imagine what the right would do if he just did it? He's like, oh, you want to say something? I could do it tomorrow. It's a business day. I could do another 10K. He's not gonna, obviously, but anyway, yes. People like it when you do stuff. And we will actually be playing that AEW clip a little bit later on. But anyway, with that, we're gonna take our first break, and when we come back, those new details about the debt cancellation plan that I find to be pretty exciting, as well as the right's reaction, which is gonna be a lot of fun. All that and more after this. Okay, everybody, with that, let's have a little bit of fun with some more good news, or at least good details about the news, starting with this.
You little jerks get no respect. We wipe you out like Biden did student debt.
Okay, no, I didn't expect that either. I didn't expect wrestlers to mention topical political developments, let alone to be giving Brandon himself positive credit on wrestling, Jordan. We're gonna get into some of the new details about the plan that have come out since the initial dump of details. But I wasn't expecting AEW to weigh in on this. What do you think?
I wasn't either. I'm not a wrestling fan.
You're not.
I've got friends. No.
I would have expected.
Not at all.
You know. Interesting.
I tangentially follow. I have a couple friends who are like obsessed with it, and then there's one guy in WWE who has like really great politics, Sami Zayn, and I really like him just because he's like really outspoken about his politics. So I like that, but that's like it. It just shows that like this is popular though, that they're name checking this in a show, like immediately on the heels of it happening to an audience that would largely, you know, it would resonate with. From what I understand though, like the wrestling audience, it leans and skews left. It's deeply working class. I think people also dismiss it because of that. So I think there's definitely a little bit of classism in how people perceive wrestling, but it's just kind of fun, mindless entertainment for blue collar folks. And that this is something they chose to name check shows this is popular. Like you were saying earlier, cancel another 10,000, lean into it. Like this is really, really popular. People love it and they want more.
Yeah, you could twist the whole Trump having been on the WWE, Joe should go in the ring and cancel 10,000 more. But anyway, yeah, I haven't watched wrestling in some time, but there was a period in high school where I was multiple times a week we were watching. I was super into it. I'm so glad to see that, you know, apparently politically somewhat allied. You should get that guy in Deep Dive, by the way. I think that would be a great show.
Sami Zayn, I wish. He's mm-hmm. he's like huge. He's like one of their top. He's like a heel, from what I understand. So they kind of like cast him as this like crazy Marxist guy. But okay. I've talked to him on Twitter a bit, and he is genuine in his politics, and he does a ton of really great work. He's Syrian, and he does a ton of great work in real life.
Cool.
Creating like health clinics for people there. He's awesome.
That's incredible. That's great news.
Yeah.
And this is a great example again, as you pointed out, like Democrats, come on, like do popular things. It's great. Like you have an advantage in that. Because while many Democrats, elected Democrats, are fairly awful and pro corporate and all that, like at least you're not seen as like crazy right wing conservatives who are by their very nature incapable of being cool. Like you can try at least. It's tough. I know you don't like selling your accomplishments and everything, but I think it's worth it. Do more good stuff. But anyway, with that, I do want to turn to more of the accomplishments. The initial reporting on the student debt cancellation plan yesterday. Had some big top line numbers, you know, 10K cancellation for people under a certain income level, an additional potentially 10K for those who had Pell grants. Turns out though, there were some pretty important details that were not initially reported, which I kind of feel like should have been included there. And I want to make sure that people come away with an all encompassing idea of the benefits in this bill, which is looking better now than it did yesterday. So. Here are some of those additional details. For one, for undergraduate loans, the amount that you will be expected to pay will be cut in half from 10% of your discretionary income to 5%. So these are details for people who are involved in what are known as income-based repayment or income-driven repayment plans, where the actual income you make determines exactly how much you pay. For people who generally have not as much in loans and also have lower amounts of income, now it'll be less of a burden every month. Also, the amount of income that is considered non-discretionary income is going to be changed. That also is going to effectively lower how much has to be paid. It'll be protected from repayment. So that is great news. Also, your loan balance will be forgiven after just 10 years of payments instead of 20 years. Now, that is for people with loan balances of $12,000 or less. So they were people who are already not the most burdened by loans, but for some of them, they had low income, so they would hit that cap. Now they'll hit it a lot faster, and the rest of the loans will be dispensed with. That is great news for people who are literally the most burdened by the loans that they have. So that's great news, as well as this, which seems like such a significant part of this, but the borrower's unpaid monthly interest will be covered. So effectively, and again, this is not for literally everyone, but as long as you are making those income-driven payments, there will be no additional interest which is levied against your account. And so in theory, while you might not be very quickly paying down the balance, it will not be endlessly growing at the same time, which if you're paying now for 10 years, like, okay, so they canceled $10,000. How many thousands of dollars is that lack of additional interest going to be worth? And so again, these are all parts of the plan. And look, when Biden came out and announced it, these were all available. But the details that they initially made available to like the New York Times, the Washington Post, I didn't see any of this in here. And I feel like these are really significant parts of the plan. But anyway, Jordan, I want to know what your overall impression of what was included and what wasn't is.
Yeah, I wish the debt cancellation amount was higher. You know, I'm somebody, I've talked about this elsewhere. I have around $90,000 in student loan debt. And only a small part of it is from undergrad. Most of it's from graduate school. So that part's not surprising. But I did have a Pell grant because my family didn't make a ton. So I qualified for $20,000. These, like the income driven repayment adjustment, cutting that in half is really, really big. Effectively ending interest on this is really, really great. One other thing that didn't get reported, and this is huge, and it was a really smart maneuver by Schumer to get it into the IRA, was not having the debt that was forgiven for people counting as income. And if you are in credit card debt and that gets written off, you default, whatever, that counts against your income at the end of the year. They circumvented that for student debt. That was so smart. So people now suddenly don't get hit with a huge tax bill at the end of the year because they got debt forgiveness. That was really smart foresight by Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah, and people were saying yesterday about that supposedly AOC was a big part of getting that put in. And thankfully it'll apply to this, but also it goes out to, I think, 2025. So in theory, there could be additional rounds of cancellation that would still apply to. So that could be a financial gift that keeps on giving. Some of the payments that might have been made during the pandemic could be retroactively refunded. That is, as far as I can see, the only retroactive element of this. If you fully paid off your loans years ago, they're not going to be canceled or anything like that. But some people apparently could have their payments refunded if they made them during the pandemic. So that's great news. And also, I wanted to give an update on, we talked yesterday on the show about how there's some fairly obvious, statistically obvious racial inequity to this. When white families have less debt on average from student loan debt, canceling X amount rather than a percentage is going to hit white Americans much more than black Americans who have more student loan debt. So all of that remains true, by the way. And so the criticisms of this is sort of the modern day form of structural racism. I think those are still valid. But some numbers for instance, Latino borrowers show that the $10,000 of cancellation will allow about half of all Latino borrowers to have their entire debt forgiven. So that's just the 10,000. That's not including Pell grants. And additional details have been provided. Almost 7 in 10 Latino student borrowers have educational debt. 33% say they've put off marriage. 37% have put off having children because of their student debt. And so those are significant changes to make to your life based on the debt that you have. And this is not putting it off for 6 months. You have that debt for years and years and years. And so that can really reconfigure your life. The idea that half of that debt could potentially be gone, or I should say for half of borrowers, it could entirely be gone. That is going to really free people up to live the lives that they should be living. Whether we're talking about marriage and kids or starting a business or moving across the country or going independent or doing whatever it is that you want to do, these are all good details. So, you know, trying to give credit where credit is due. Any other thoughts, Jordan?
Definitely. I think that's great. On that point, people delaying things, I mean, one of the biggest, you know, life milestones that helps people build capital and build wealth in their life is owning a home. And you know, survey after survey after survey has showed that millennials have put off or are putting off buying a home for years because of their student debt, you know, millions of them. And this freeing it up is going to help them advance in their life. I wish it would help everybody. But you know, $300 billion or so in student debt cancellation still leaves like $1.4 trillion. So from down from like 1.6 or 7 with the other cancellations. So still a long way to go. And I still certainly have my share that is not going away. But come on, come on, Brandon, let's get it done.
I know. We'll take what we can get, but what I also said yesterday was like I do like the establishment of precedent. So if he can cancel 10 to 20K, then in theory, couldn't he cancel more? Couldn't another president in a couple of years? Like now it's a thing that is done. So
but one last thing though, on that point, like graduate loans are being part of this. Graduate loans being part of this is huge because increasingly, and as we go on, it's going to be an even bigger requirement for more and more jobs. You need to have a master's. So that's a huge debt share for people. And including that in this is really big because as that increasingly becomes a requirement for jobs, for people to move up in their career, like we need to consider the cost of a master's program, which is astronomical.
We predicted yesterday that the right was not going to react in a particularly rational fashion to a little bit of student debt being canceled. And one day in, I think we were onto something. Take a look at this mashup.
still trying to get over this whole thing because, listen, Jesse, if you were doing a tutorial on what the collapse of great empires look like, just pick up your phone, start the video camera, because this is exactly what it looks like, and just leave it running. This is the movie. This is the autobiography of the American empire collapsing before our very eyes.
We have a lot of young people that work on my TV show, and I'm making $125,000. They're now eligible to get, in some cases, up to $20,000, and in other cases, $10,000. And this is New Green Deal radical socialism.
It's about the fact that Joe Biden wants to get reelected. He knows that 53% of people who are under the age of 35 disapprove of him. And this is one of the ways that he wants to get their vote. He wants to buy their vote. Look, my family paid for my education. I'm sure they had better things to do with their money. I didn't have to take out a loan because they paid for it, but they worked hard for their money. This is a giveaway and it's disgusting. What about those people?
Clowns come in many forms and they're all over Fox News. So this is how great empires fall because some Pell Grants were eliminated. Specifically calling out your employees as not deserving help is such a weird choice to make for Sean Hannity. And then implying that it is wrong to give something that you promised you would if you got elected to your voters. That is bribing them. I would love to see Jeanine Pirro apply that to literally anything else that's been done politically over the last few decades. But Jordan, what do you think about their narratives there?
The Pirro clip was great. My parents paid for my education. Well, that's great. Good for you. Not everyone can just pick their family and a wealthy family. But also, when she went to school, college was much cheaper. It is probably since then the average cost of a state school has tripled or quadrupled. So it was in the state subsidies have basically inverted over the years. States used to subsidize, 80, sometimes 90% of your tuition. Now it's like 20% or so. So that's a worldview that they largely support. They don't want governments subsidizing these types of things. They want to cut all this government spending. Yep. So this is the problem that they have advocated for decades. And now they're complaining that people get a tiny bit of relief. On the Hannity thing, it's great. I would love to see a conversation where he looks somebody on his staff in the eye and says, this is terrible. You're getting $10,000 or $20,000 of your debt wiped away. This is so awful for you. I'm so sorry. I'm sure you would love to pay a 10 or 20,000. Mm-hmm. Nobody really wants it. Nobody who doesn't get paid to take these stances actually wants to pay more in student loans.
Yeah, that's a great hypothetical, but I really would love to talk to some of those producers. So like they know they want the cancellation, but like, oh God, they've got to feel so conflicted. Like I'm not supposed to like this, but I like it. So we'll see. We'll see maybe if any of them will give an anonymous interview or something. What's interesting though with Jeanine Pirro is you were talking about it being cheaper back in the day. So I looked it up and Jeanine Pirro is 71 years old. So I took a look at what the average cost of tuition was 50 years ago. And it turns out there are comparisons to that. So in 2020 to 2021, 1 year of in-state tuition and fees at a public nonprofit university was $10,560. So about a year ago, $10,560. If you live in the state and it's a state school, okay, back when she was in college, it was $394. So a little bit different, even accounting for inflation. But anyway, those are a few of their initial responses because look, it isn't just that they hate this is happening. They obviously do. Government action is not supposed to benefit the masses, the peasants. It's supposed to go to wealthy people. You're supposed to pay back the people who got you elected as a Republican president by passing trillions of dollars in tax cuts literally every time. That's what they do, and Fox has never complained about that. But they also hate that people might like it. They don't want people in their audience, some of whom have student loan debt, to get that cancellation and think, that's actually not that bad. And so they have to hit them from so many different directions. And so you've got not just Fox, but you got Lauren Boebert tweeting, I loved paying back my student loans so much that I want to do it for other people, said by no one ever. Yet what I loved being burdened for decades by student loan debt, said no one ever. Like, do you get that? That might be more people than you're citing there. Ben Shapiro, who is joining the Charlie Kirk school of right-wing thought by just saying hashtag defund the universities. They're not hiding anymore. Like they all, well, Charlie Kirk, I don't think went to college, but Ben Shapiro went to like how many different colleges? Oh, but they're really bad for other people. You shouldn't go. It's great for him, but you should never go. You got the deputy opinion editor at Newsweek saying, I just don't know how these people making 100K a year look people in the face who change seniors' bedpans for a living or drive a truck or work the railroad or stock grocery shelves or deliver their Amazon packages and say, you, yes, you, give me 10K. I just don't get it. Because that is very much how this plan will work. You will go up to your Amazon delivery driver and be like, you give me $10,000. By the way, you know who probably has student loan debt? Your Amazon delivery driver. Probably would love the cancellation that they're talking about right there. I got more, Jordan, but let me know what you think.
Yeah, I think what this all underscores is the right now recognizes that they have a yet another electoral challenge, another obstacle in their way that they don't know how they're going to overcome. Dobbs is one thing, and they're already scrambling from that, and they're not doing well. Now they have to go with something that is widely popular among people who are politically and civically engaged. And try to convince them, actually, no, you, this thing that is materially good for you, you actually hate. You could see that in Hannity's comment. Look at how he described it. He threw every possible buzzword in that same sentence. It's radical Green New Deal, democratic socialism. No, it's none of those things. And he's just trying to get people to, you know, the little Pavlov's dogs situation in their head. Oh, I don't like those words. That's what he's hoping for. But no serious rational person is going to look at that and say, oh, I now don't owe $10,000 or $20,000 to a loan servicer. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And they're right scrambling, they're panicking. And that's why you see all these outbursts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're desperate. I'm not 100% sure about how worried they should be, because you know, they faced this sort of thing in the past. You know, the ACA is not Medicare for all, but the ACA was much better than the absolute hellscape that preceded it. And yet many Republicans were able to benefit massively by the ACA and still come out the other end believing that the government is literally the worst thing and that it would be better to somehow go back to the Wild West before it. But like, I think about how weak some of these criticisms are, like trying to convince someone who drives a truck. What if the person who drives a truck has a kid who wants to go to college? You don't think that they're gonna like the idea that, because this is not just about individuals who have student loan debt. Everyone knows people burdened by student loan debt. Their kids have student loan debt. Some of their parents still have student loan debt. Their friends and family members and coworkers have student loan debt. And all of those people finally being relieved of at least some of that burden, it seems like a big ask to convince them that that is an evil thing to do. Or to convince them that, like Will Kane wanted to say, like it's like giving someone who's addicted to heroin more heroin. Okay? Or Tucker Carlson, who he's always gonna try to thread that needle of trying to appear populist as he literally advocates for people to get less help. He said that giving student debt relief is reparations being paid to drug addicted robots with no job prospects. He said specifically, does that seem fair? Well, no, when you make up insane stuff, it doesn't seem fair. That's how Washington works. Politicians reward their donors first, they're first in line. So first of all, I love the implication that Tucker Carlson is against donors being rewarded by politicians or money getting out of politics or whatever. What he's trying to say here though, here's his little scheme. He's saying the colleges have gotten away with murder by jacking up the price of college. And since this plan pays off the debt rather than making the colleges pay it off, then this is paying off the colleges, who I guess are the biggest donors to politicians. So, okay, would you like to cap the price of tuition, Tucker Carlson? Since you are a populist, they're the elites, they're getting away with murder. Let's stop them from getting away with murder. Let's cap how much they can actually charge for their tuition, or let's make them pay with their massive, their operating funds that they have to pay for some of the student debt cancellation. Do you want to do that? Of course he doesn't want to do that. It's just such fake, shallow, transparent, wafer thin populism here. Any other thoughts, Jordan?
Yeah, that's Tucker's whole MO. He sends his, he sent his kids to a private boarding school that costs around $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Multiple kids, paid for their college. He's, you know, the heir to a corporate fortune. He's extremely wealthy. When we uncovered the Bubba the Love Sponge tapes, when I was at Media Matters, he was bragging about his private jet and his lifestyle. This isn't somebody who cares about issues affecting the working class. He just pretends like he cares on TV because it gets him, you know, think pieces from gullible writers in Vox who call him, you know, starting, say he's starting an interesting debate over capitalism. And the comparison to heroin addicts, beyond just being offensive, it's not giving a heroin addict more heroin, it's giving a heroin addict Suboxone. It's getting them off and getting them out of a situation, a cyclical cycle where they're never ending, where they have these never ending debt payments that keep growing because of interest. It's getting them out of that situation in part. But ultimately, all of this is this selfishness, this rugged individualism, as Republicans like to brand themselves as. Yesterday, a friend of ours, Manny Fidel, who's with NBC News, saw his entire debt wiped out. And he was really happy. And look, mine wasn't, but I'm happy for him because that frees up somebody I care about to live a better life. We should be happy that other people don't have to have a debt burden anymore. Because just as we advocate to eliminate medical debt because it's unreasonable, just as we fight for Medicare for all, just as we fight for housing guarantees and every other social policy across the board, we do that not because it benefits us, but because it creates a better society. So when we see people who are free to this debt burden, we should celebrate, even if we don't directly benefit in the maximum possible way. You said before, you had debt and you paid it off and you've wanted this still. And that shows the mindset we should all have. Whether you've paid it off before, whether you still have debt or you benefit from it, we should collectively fight for more of this. Because these types of policies, the more they're enacted and the more the government takes these steps, the better off we will all be. And that rising tide will lift all of our boats.
It's so, like, I can buy you not liking wrestling. Okay, fine. Even though I would have guessed there's a chance that you've watched wrestling in your life. But the fact that you, there's nothing, you haven't liked one movie. One movie? Deadpool or something?
That's Logan? Not like part of, from what I understand, from what I am told repeatedly from people, that's actually not in the main MCU.
You're right. It's not, although he is joining the MCU soon, but it's not. That's fair. You didn't like Logan? That's like an art house movie almost.
Saw it.
No? You didn't like, you saw it, but you didn't like it?
No, I never saw it.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fine. Okay, I'm gonna invite you over to watch a tape of like a concert from the 70s, but I'm really gonna put on Logan. Anyway, okay, with that, we've got a little bit of time and something important to talk about. So let's jump into this. Marjorie Greene has been swatted again, apparently, multiple nights running, and that is a bad thing. It's also kind of a mysterious thing for reasons we're gonna delve into, because while everything could be as she is describing it, there are reasons to believe that there might be more going on below the surface. But she announced early this morning, swatted again last night. This follows her previous day's tweet. Last night I was swatted just after 1 a.m. Now, she had to wake up early because of the swatting and then spent literally the rest of the day appearing on right-wing talk shows to talk about how she'd been swatted and how that makes her campaign to completely annihilate the trans community even more necessary than it ever was before. And I will say, swatting is bad always. Don't swat people. And if it was actually a Democrat or a lib or a progressive or whoever who swatted Marjorie Greene, don't do that. It helps her. But it also at the same time might help her by design, because here is what is so suspicious about this. After the cops went and talked to her, found out that nothing was going on, they returned to the police station and there they received a call from the alleged perpetrator of the swatting. In a computer generated voice, the caller claimed they had targeted Greene over her stance on transgender youth's rights. So that is suspicious AF. Why would you accurately admit why you had done it? Why would you call the cops in the first place? Why would you implicate supporters of the trans community in doing something that is 100% going to be perceived as an illegitimate, politically violent almost attack against a Republican congresswoman. Why would you do that? Now, there are more details, Jordan, but seems a bit suspicious.
It does. I'm withholding judgment on some of the other issues until we learn more. But as somebody, I've talked about it on this show before, as someone who has been swatted, I can tell you it's not fun. Don't do it. It sucks. I hope people are never on the receiving end of it. If she was, I feel bad for her. As a friend of mine, Keffels, who we're going to get into in a bit, who was recently very seriously swatted. It's traumatizing. I've talked about it before. About a few days a week, every week, I wake up thinking it's happening again because it is awful. It is really, really awful. So I think people should be cautious in how dismissive they are of this story because it's gotten people killed before. It's really unnerving. It's just a very unsettling experience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you are totally right. Ideally, we will get more information, although it is possible that if they're spoofing their number, if they're doing that, maybe we won't. And the thing is, like, I am going to try to go even too far, perhaps, in the direction of trying to be fair, wherein if it is possible that a person who supports Marjorie Greene could call the cops and say, I didn't like her because she attacked the trans community as a way to throw the blame to members of the trans community or at least supporters of them, it's not inconceivable that it could be a double blind where you could call knowing that's going to look super suspicious to get rid of the concerns. You're starting to get a bit convoluted at that point, but it is entirely possible. It is also possible that while it looks suspicious, it is genuine. And someone is bizarre enough, dumb enough to actually have done it for that reason, and then willingly called up the cops to admit why you did it, even knowing that it would make you and your cause look terrible. All of these things are possible. I have no idea what the truth is. What I know, though, is that she is taking this thing and running with it. And by the way, it could have been done to benefit her side without her knowing about it, too. That's entirely possible as well. She could legitimately have been terrified for her life when she was swatted. And I don't wish that on anyone, even my worst enemies, of which I would probably rank her as one of those. So don't swat people regardless. But anyway, yes, as you point out, Keffels was swatted. And that group, the Kiwi Farms, apparently is involved in this too, or at least the person who called the cops wants you to believe that they are. They claimed to be from Kiwi Farms, despite the fact they were saying they were attacking her because she attacks the trans community, which is what that community is known for. And now Green has gone on multiple shows calling for that site to be taken down, apparently not being familiar with it. So the whole thing at this point, Jordan, is just it's really bizarre. It's difficult to know exactly what to take out of this.
Exactly. And that's why I'm kind of on the Marjorie Taylor Greene point, a little reluctant to fully weigh in. On the Keffels thing, this is somebody who is, you know, a really well-meaning person from all I can gather. She's raised a ton of money for different trans groups. She was, like we said, swatted after being doxxed on Kiwi Farms. They came into her home with assault weapons and they took her, you know, electronics or computers, just really upended her life. And it's the doxing has happened repeatedly. Now she has to move and I think leave the country, which is, I hope she could find safety. But also, what site, like, what purpose does this site ultimately serve? It just seems like it's just to do targeted harassment against trans people. Even when they were taken down, the site was briefly down for a moment. They changed their description of their status page on the site outage page to make a joke about transgender suicide. Like, this, the people who control that site, that's where they stand. Cloudflare backs this site up, and this is a company that purportedly cares about diversity and inclusion. If this is how one of your clients is operating, I question your commitment to that cause.
I think that's incredibly fair. I mean, that's like, I can't imagine worse people than people who would do that. Okay, I have one or two other thoughts about this. We'll have to talk about them on the other side. We're up against the end of the hour. So everybody watching on the linear platforms of the podcast, thank you as always for watching. Those of you on other platforms, we've got way more to talk about. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.